Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Department of Arts and Culture. It's not the first time they were engaging. We've met on several occasions. But I don't know if you still remember who the members are. I don't know if you want to be reminded. From our side, we would like to be reminded of the officials that are part of your delegation. I am a Bungi Nazwani, the chairperson of the committee. I'll request the members to introduce themselves, starting from Honorable Grunewald.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Grunewald, representing the Northwest Province and a member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hans Stock. I'm also a member of the Select Committee representing the Northern Sea. Thank you.
Morning, colleagues. I'm Tan Ling from Western Uganda, and I'm representing the Western Cape, a member of the committee.
Julian Kamuka is a Panhoidi Mampuru, and a member of the committee and also the Week of the Culture. Thank you.
My name is Julio Chek. I'm the Acting Director General of the Department of Agriculture.
Good morning, I'm Monica Newton, Deputy Director General of Cultural Promotion and Development. I'm currently acting as Deputy Director General of Institutional Governance in the Department of Agriculture.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Busikem Bandima, Deputy Director General of Heritage Promotion and Preservation in the Department of Agriculture.
Good morning, and my name is Matilda Mukuti, and I'm the Deputy Director General for Corporate Services.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Makoto Matala, Chief Financial Officer for Agriculture. morning, honorable members. My name is Lula Lanta Maburu from the Office of Labor and Social Affairs.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Mateka Rabibip from the Office of the Director General.
Hello, my
Good morning, my name is Martha Williams, Committee South.
Good morning, my name is Linda Spokule, Director for the Committee.
Over to you, Mr. President.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mashuru Godfrey Mutembala from UWC, Faculty of Law, and PMG as well.
Good morning, I'm Shana Thompson, also from PMG.
Well, thank you for the introduction. Let us get started with the business of the day. We are going to consider apologies. I just wanted to take note of the fact that the minister is not here. One does understand that his cabinet day but we do have apologies from both the minister and the deputy for not being able to attend the presentation today. We really do get concerned if both of them understand. Much as we understand that it's cabinet day, but at least one would have expected it is the deputy to be present, as there is an apology. We do accept the apology that she has attended. We do hope then that next time around she will make a concerted effort to attend the following meeting. Let us welcome you to the briefing session at NCC, together with the delegation. But we do take note also as a concern that the post is not permanently fixed. I don't know when it's going to be fixed permanently. I don't know if the CFO is not acting. Is it a permanent defeat? Permanent now.
Yes.
Thank you. The common need of your department, as we all know, is social cohesion and nation building. That's the common need. And I want to believe that you will the wife of your children. The purpose of the briefing, though, is to ensure, as a select committee states, the plan that is before you is combined with the major instrument of this government, the fifth element. One such instrument is the NCP. It is compliant with the NCP. It is compliant with the state of the nation as well and the state of the country. Is it compliant with the MTSF? Is it compliant with the act that was passed and the policies that we have passed as a department? Those are the issues that we need to be interrogated. I don't know whether in light of the sentence then your commandate is social cohesion and then a making person, you are going to say something because we're going to request to the minister, one of them if they were here, to come comment on the object of xenophobic attack in a recent past few weeks. Maybe you have some kind of comment to make along those lines as to what programs you have in the department to address that problem. The minister was in the Ethiopia, however, and he actually gave us quite a comprehensive program of what the department is going to do. But just for the purposes of communication. We are also concerned about the fact that the immigration insofar as the audit outcome is concerned. And what measures are in setting to ensure that you redirect your department to get a dream audit outcome, as it has done in the previous year. Tell us also about the language practitioner type. What is the progress in that regard? And the structure of the budget as to where it has been reduced and why it has been up and why, and so maybe the CFO will cover the part of it, but it will depend on you. let me hand it over to you. That's the process. I don't smoke going to do the presentation. You arrange yourself accordingly.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I'll be doing the presentation covering the overview, and then when we go into the AGP, I will then request my colleagues to go into the AGP of the specific areas, and then we can be able to then take questions. Thanks for the opportunity to present the strategic plan. And what I would like to take you through is how we got the planning process. As you would realize that 80% of our budget goes to our entity, and so it became important to be looking at a sector-wide engagement before we can finalize our strategic plan, because we need to ensure that our entities can actually also implement their core mandate of social cohesion and nation building. And then we also look at how we police the context within which we then prepare the plan, and also looking at the alignment as the strategic indicators, the NDP and the 2014 to 2019 MTSF, and then to also then look at some of the issues that have been raised by Auditor General and how we're actually dealing with that. And the critical thing is how to address the root causes of those problems that were mentioned by the Auditor General, and also through our internal audit function, and then be able to then highlight the quality priorities and then go into the indicators and targets then that will enable those policy priorities to be actualized. So that's the broad overview then I will give, and then we'll then go into the different segments of the different branches as well in terms of the ACP. So how we engaged on the strategic planning, we were consulting the entire sector, which included our entity, and we had sessions in Cape Town and in Durban, and also where we looked at in Johannesburg for the sector-wide strategic planning retreat. And then when we then came up with the first draft, we engaged with the presidency and CPME, and also the national treasury as required by the legislation. And then we took their comments and were able to address some of that. And then we had second draft of the strategic plan back to the Treasury and the Presidency. And then ultimately we tabled the final plan on the 27th of February to the Presidency and Parliament, as well as also the Treasury. So what has been the strategic poster is that we needed to look at the present state of the nation's address and make sure that we reflect that. And also when we look at the budget vote of the minister last year, he really did take the message of the state of the nation to a different level. And we think that it's reflected in the program that we're going to be unfolding. And also when we look at the policy levers that we're going to be using, we think that the state of the nation is taken into account. But also we needed to realize that we need to use our resources effectively. The Treasury has told us you're not going to get any more money, so we have to do more with less. And that means that we need to be able to think also outside the box and still be able to deliver on the core mandate. And also make sure that we beef up on the oversight and monitoring of our public entities, because 80% of our spend goes there. And there's the problematic ones, and we've set here honorable chair, like PENSA, where we're dealing with the language issues, the use of official languages act in the implementation. We need to make sure that we have the structures that can help us to deliver. So we'll also delve a little bit into that, because it's the nature concern. But also taking to say, when we look at the rate of social economic transformation, what are the economic spin-offs that can be measurable that we can be able to put in place? And also, how do we make sure that we address on a transversal basis women empowerment and youth and people with disabilities empowerment? And our APP that talks to that, that we've now innovated that and made sure that for our program, we must be able to measure what is the impact on the groups, and structure the department to ensure that every program can be able to get counseling on that. And so when we look at then our vision and mission, I wouldn't go into a lot of details because we've looked at that, but I'd like to look at the strategic outcome-oriented goals. First, then we need to have a transformed, coherent, and development-focused art, culture, and heritage sector. What is critical? Because we have 80% of our budget going to the entities, we need to make sure that then there is harmony. What you find is that you might have a policy at Market Theatre which is different from the policy at Escape. And we can't have it because then you might be able to reach different outcomes. Whereas if you have one policy that affects that can be utilized by all our performing arts institutions, and then you can be able to drive in a harmonious way certain outcomes. And we can also be able to inform the audience outcomes in a much better way in actually making sure that we deliver. And then being able to also development focus, we need to have an active role in developing the sector. We can't just be receiving entities and whereby we're only having like 80% of our transfer covering only the staff cost and the administrative cost. We need to change the thinking around to say how do we actually develop, whether we're looking at museums or whether we're looking at the theatres, we need to be seeing the developmental aspects coming out from there. And then the second goal is looking at nation building through effective social cohesion program implementation. And this is the core outcome of the NDSF as well, outcome 40, and that has to cascade throughout the sector, throughout our entity. And that's what they also are taking into account when they are looking at their APPs and strategies to make sure that we drive this as a core mandate. But not only that, we need to also try to create champions in other departments. So through the outcome 14 and the IMC, we actually see more of the ministries coming on board. In actually some, for example, like in education, they have a dedicated social cohesion branch that drives social cohesion initiatives. And that's the kind of activism that we also are encouraging other departments through the IMC on outcome 14. But we need to set the things in our entities, and then we can then be able to play that role of promoting social cohesion. And then the third goal is a productive, diverse, and inclusive ACH sector. And the key is that we need to be able to have diversity celebrated, but we need to make sure that it's also inclusive, that we don't have divisions. In the sector, and that's how you are actually able to build a thriving arts and culture and heritage sector. And then sound fiscal management and sustainable ACH sector. Without sustainability, we're not going to be able to come up with a local content that reflects the diversity that we have. So sound fiscal management is our critical focus. That we are looking at making sure that we entrench that foundation in the DAV itself and the entity. And hence, that also links to the greater policy planning coherence in the sector to help the entities have the same basis in terms of policies, whether it's how we measure heritage assets and application of the GRAP standards and making sure that we are helping them with all the outcomes in managing that. That becomes quite important in terms of fiscal management, but also looking at business model that brings about sustainability and how they can think outside the box in terms of the business model that becomes important given that we cannot be able to give more transfers. So how do they ensure that more audiences come in that can then supplement the transfer payments that link to the entity? But that will rely on the last goal, which is a professional and capacitated HCH sector, not only internally, but also externally. And so when we look at internally within a DAC, we need to make sure that we build the skills and capacity, because we can then be a good catalyst to be able to allow the sector to grow. Because if it's the sector grow and we're not able to clean up our field and make sure that we have people that have capacity, we're not going to be able to play that catalyst role. So these are the broad strategic outcomes and goals. That then when we look at each and every branch that we're going to be there, and this is the goal that we are mapping. When we look at the APP, we're going to look at how is the APP addressing these goals. So when we look at the mandate of the DFC, the Constitution is our Bible because it forms all the actions that we do. And then we have the sector legislation, and we have still about 19 acts within the within the sector. And then also we have specific fund legislation for the DAC and for some of the DAC entities, for example, the National Heritage Council would have a particular, PENSA would also have a particular specific act. And also we are guided by the Division of Revenue Tax, especially for managing the annual grant, the conditional grant for libraries. And then the governance legislation in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And there's different policy frameworks that guide us in the different branches that we're working in. And also from the policy context, the new growth plan does inform our policies, because that's how the Mzansi Golden Economy Strategy came about. It came from the new growth plan. And also the industrial policy action 2 and 3, driven by the DTI, informs our policy. And then the NDP is a critical, and you'll see when we go through some of the progress, how the NDP is given life. And then the MTSF for 2014 to 2019 covers quite a lot of the key areas, especially outcome 14, the critical areas we need for driving. And then we have the Mzansi Golden Economy Strategy. The election manifesto is also critical because we are actually able to map the election manifesto up to the state of the nation, because we need to be able to deliver on those commitments made in the manifesto. And then when we look at the key areas that are aligned in terms of the National Development Plan, definitely on chapter 15 being the nation building and social cohesion. And this became also quite critical now with the attacks on foreign nationals, to be able to say, how do we then build social cohesion given these? And what has happened is that in July last year, the minister conceptualized Africa Month, which is what he is actually celebrating, whereby we are actually celebrating the diversity of Africa and celebrating the vision AU 2063. And so we've been planning it, and then of course then these outbreaks of attacks took place. And so then Africa Month actually then became much broader in its remit, in the sense of then addressing some of these issues. And it's in process now, and we've seen when we launched, we had a carnival where we had a number of African countries participating, celebrating the message that we are Africa, and where we are showing the unity that says this is who we are, and not in a reactive way. So then it allowed us to be able to launch the program in not in response to the attack, but it was planned before to be able to celebrate we are. And we have colloquium that explores who are we, what is this African renaissance, but both from the identity perspective in terms of the seven aspirations of the AU 2063 vision, but also from an economic perspective. There are those colloquiums that have been rolled out, but also celebrating our culinary diversity, fashion diversity, and in the different provinces we have events taking place looking at celebrating the diversity that we have in Africa. So that's an example of the social cohesion aspect through Africa Month. And Cabinet has adopted it in the chief for the year to say we are Africa. And you'll see on TV on the ABC that logo. And when we had the marches as well to protest against the attacks on foreign nationals, that was the rallying call that we are Africa. And then also we're then looking at job creation and economic development. We do look at that chapter within the NDP, and then quality education and rural development. And these are also covered in the MTSF elements. When you look at the detailed targets, they are mapped to the NDP. And the department is charged with overseeing outcome 14, and we're responsible in reporting on the progress thereof. And but there are other MTSF outcomes that we are contributing towards to, like outcome one, improving quality of basic education, decent employment, inclusive growth, which is outcome four, and the other outcomes that we are contributing to. Now, when we look at the overview of the department's performance, in terms of job creation, through the Mzansi Golden Economy strategy, we've been able to create just over through the festival that we hold, creating over 14,000 jobs. And of course, the name of the jobs in the creative industry are that it's part-time. And also, and also when you look at the subsector, so it's because it's, you have a lot of what you call freelance workers. And so, but therefore you are able to create job opportunities rather than in terms of sustainable long-term jobs due to the inherent nature of the industry. And so that's what, how much we've been able to contribute to. And in 2012 there was a social cohesion summit with a 12-point declaration, and we've then been able to, at the end of the last financial year, have a report back summit that is strengthening the social cohesion advocate program. And we are having community conversation to be able to address some of the issues. Now, the way we're taking the community conversation is rather than just taking a shotgun approach, we're taking a very concentrated approach where we are looking at issues that are affecting us. So, for example, when we look at the issues around the energy challenge, how can we be able to ready the community to address the energy challenge? When we talk about the issue, for example, on the statutes, the debate, then we can be able to say, yes, okay, we need to engage people to be able to talk about what kind of heritage do they want, and then represent them, and engage in the conversation that can be actionable. And to this end, of course, the minister has put together a task team that can be able to drive that conversation and channel the energy to say, okay, we're not happy with this representation of the colonial era. However, there's processes on how you manage that process, and then, but in itself, what comes in? So those are conversations that what then represents you that needs to be taking place. And those community conversations allow that channeling of energy so that we can come up with something tangible at the end of those conversations. And then, when we also look at the strategic reorientation, the adoption of the Mzansi Golden Economy enabled us to now focus to make sure that we have a link of agriculture to job creation and economic growth. And that talks to also to the NDP and also to President Met call for radical socio-economic transformation. And we can be able to respond that in the heart by the strategic reorientation. And of course, there's been problems whereby we had recurring deficiencies from priors, we had non-compliance with policies and procedures, and a lot of deficiencies around our supply chain management, procurement, and contract and records management. Mm-hmm. And we've had challenges in filling the key positions, especially the chief financial officer has been very tense, and we've been adding people there for the last 5 years, and now, finally, we have a permanent financial chief financial officer, and also the DDG for corporate services. And so we are addressing these critical vacancies and making sure that we are fast-tracking the appointment. And there were significant audit findings from the Auditor General, and which resulted in a qualification. And the core of the qualification was around irregular expenditure. And so what we've taken as a policy grant, we cannot incur. There's zero tolerance for incur of irregular expenditure. And we've taken action. So we still have the remnants of the previous irregular expenditure in the current year, because some of the irregularities is not only covering one financial year, it's covering until the contract ends, but there is minimal irregular expenditure incurred in this in the current year, because we've taken that zero tolerance to irregular expenditure. And broadly beyond the department, there's been a lot of also socio-economic situations that we face in terms of high unemployment, particularly amongst Black youth, women, and people with disabilities. And that's why we've taken a stance to say, for all the funding, for all our programs, there's a target for women. When we look at procurement, there's a target for black-owned companies that are owned by black women. And this is in line with also the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Code. But also when we are looking at the funding, we will prioritize the programs that have people with disabilities. And official will be measured according to how we're meeting these targets. So, and that gets monitored on a regular basis, because before you make the funding decision, you're looking at, say, have we covered these areas for women? And if we're finding that we are trailing behind, then we take a conscious effort to increase that focus on women, on people with disabilities, and youth, especially. And of course, we're finding that we are a society still divided along racial lines of race, class, and faith. And this has become stark when we look at our national days. How many people actually celebrate the national days? How to then make national days to be much more inclusive? And that's a priority area that we are going to deal with later. So it's trying to deal with some of these social economic factors. And but also infrastructure challenges in terms of the skills needed to build infrastructure and the capacity to be able to deliver on infrastructure. We're also dealing with some of those issues. And then also within the department, we've had weak internal control. And so we then say, how do we beef up the internal controls and change the policies in order to be streamlining the set of delivery that the department can be able to fast track. And then also when you look broadly in terms of cultural diplomacy, we find that the HCH sector is reactive to approaches from other countries and therefore not maximizing the value of cultural diplomacy. And that is why Africa Month becomes quite important. And we've had seasons, which is bilateral, like the French season, and now currently we are having the British season and the China season in South Africa. And so in most cases we've been more reactive. So now we're taking a proactive approach to how do we actually drive cultural diplomacy. And of course, with priorities, prioritizing Africa, and also the BRICS in terms of the relationship that we have within the BRICS. But also, how do we actually look at arts education and in terms of skills development and arts curriculum in school? That's part of creating our audiences that we need to be actually addressing. So, the policy priorities in our 5-year plan is that, one, we need to have an enabling policy, legislative, and a regulatory environment, and two, to make sure that we have inclusive economic development. Now, in South Africa, we've had growth, but that growth was not distributed evenly. So the rich got richer, and the poor got poorer. So we need to address that, even in the sector, to say how do we make sure that when there is growth, it is actually evenly distributed across the sector. And then the third policy priority is nation building and social cohesion programs and radical economic transformation. That is very critical to be able to take a look at our policies and say, are they actually having transformative outcomes? If we are funding a content, what is the transformation outcome that we are getting? What is the social cohesion and nation building outcome we get from this concept? So that becomes a litmus test for us. And of course, the last one being effective governance and implementation institution. Making sure that we don't have head in the clouds and feet on the ground going different directions. We need to be able to have the head in the clouds and feet that follow that direction. That's how we're going to be able to accelerate service delivery. And so I'd like to then look at the key strategic responses in terms of from the department's perspective. So the key imperative outcome 14 from a strategic response is and the key priority area is to make sure that we lead government and society in implementing the nation building and social cohesion agenda and strengthening the social cohesion advocate program and also improve support and collaboration with the moral regeneration movement. So these are the forces that need to be mobilized to enable social cohesion and nation building to take place. Second priority is that the one Vipassana relation, this is so important. We're currently sitting with the 1996 white paper, but we need to be looking at the context that we are interested to say, what is the policy framework that needs to drive that radical socio-economic transformation in the sector. So in the white paper, we're currently going through the consultation processes. We're going through the first round. It's going to be going up into the different provinces for further consultation, whereby we are looking at how do we look at the business model of our entity. Are they achieving what they're supposed to be achieving? How do we actually develop artists from both the technical and business field perspectives? How do we create incubators that can enable local content to come through? How do we look at our funding mechanism in order to be able to give that radical socio-economic transformation where we can see more local content? And so that's very critical. And then the third priority is looking at the Mzansi Golden Economy Initiative to be able to say, what are the tax incentives that can be then utilized to be a stimulus in getting more money investment into the arts and culture heritage sector. So we're engaging with Treasury on revising Section 18A in terms of allowing the deductions for the contributions that people make to the arts, culture and heritage sector. And looking at the Art Bank, for example, in Nakisa, that looks at how to develop the skills, not only from a technical perspective, but from a business perspective of the artists within the sector. And looking at the venture capital fund linked to the creative arts incubators, because once you've been incubated, you need to have seed capital to actually start your entity and to be able to be helped to be sustainable. So there is that venture capital fund that is being designed currently. And that deals with the Mzansi Golden Economy issues. And then we look at heritage promotion and preservation. Critical. And we could have a hero's acre whereby we can be able to define this is the heritage that defines us. And this is a process that is being fast-tracked. For example, there is land that has been now an MOU being signed between the city of Pune and the department where the hero's acre will be in Kroon Kloof Reserve. And the development is going to be starting now. And this provides us with an opportunity to be able to say, this is the heritage that represents us as South Africa. And we also are attracting the liberation heritage route, whereby we are looking in each of the provinces, the three pilot sites, to be able to say, how do we preserve the liberation heritage route in all these provinces as a third phase? And we can be able to then scale up based on the lessons that we get from the three pilot sites. And what this causes us is to also think of different ways of memorializing the liberation heritage that we have. It's not only going to be about building statues, but it could be, and also it's not about building in terms of institutions, because that would require us to say, how do we memorialize the liberation heritage in a unique and yet effective and emotive way that reflects what happened and in a way that can also motivate us. And then we are looking at also, at the second stage, expansion of the liberation heritage route outside the country, for example, the Matola Rate. How do we actually then link it up with this South Africa heritage route and other places in Angola, Tanzania, and so forth? That should be the second phase. And then the other area is our school program. Now, we have in each branch different programs that relate to schools, and we realize that actually we need to centralize it so that we can be able to have that economy of scale. So therefore we have the in the department now taken all these different programs and put it at our schools program. And so for example, flex distribution in schools, assets in schools, art curriculum becomes a critical element. But also then it enables us to come up with programs, for example, how do we institutionalize the constitutional values in schools, coming up with projects in schools, and we're working directly with the Department of Basic Education in with our schools program in order to be able to reach maximum impact. And whereby we provide content, but then we can also help with the teacher enrichment to be able to deliver some of the content. So the collaboration becomes important by having it centralized it makes it much more easier to prepare the program to become very effective. Rather than it being spread around, you're not able to see the impact of the school program. And what is important about the school's program is that this will result in future audiences. And if the artists, if the kids that are exposed to this are not artists, but they could be patrons of the art, that is why it's very important to have art curriculum in school, both as a mainstream curriculum, but also as an after-school thing, because then it can take them off the street. The way the sport has an ability to take them off the street. And so that's the key strategic thrust of the school's program. And then in terms of the library, we then have a look at saying, given that we've been pursuing the conditional grants in libraries, what are the lessons in order for us to fast-track the development and the rollout of libraries? What are the lessons that we need to have a standardized design and development approach, whereby we give options to the provinces to say, these are the architectures we can be able to use. By doing that, it increases the time. It decreases the time to actually build the library, because you don't waste time trying to find this appropriate design. But also, secondly, it helps us to manage the cost, because we will know for this type of library, this is the type of cost that you can be able to incur. So that's why we are working in streamlining. And then also, we're looking at stressing the oversight mechanism to monitor and evaluate the progress of these projects. But more importantly, once you start the library, it's not enough to just build a library. It's how do you actually increase people to come to the libraries and enhance the culture of reading. So then there must be programs that supplement that building, because then you're going to be having beautiful structures, but without people using them to actually enhance the culture of reading in the country. And then the seventh priority is the cultural diplomacy program, where we're concluding the UK season and prioritizing the Africa season as a pre-season. And currently, up at Ludwig in India, we have Africa Month, and that's a key cultural diplomacy initiative of the department to be able to celebrate We Are Africa. And then covering the language area, this is a very, very important one, because with language, how do we popularize all languages and encourage the use of official languages? And that is why the Act was passed. But the challenge is to be able to provide the regulatory foundation and looking at the institution that will enable the department to utilize the use of official languages act. And the biggest challenge frankly is PENSUM. In terms of PENSUM is not yet currently in providing that assistance. And that's why we are putting a lot of attention on how we turn PENSUM around. And the minister will probably be making more information in terms of his budget vote, how that is being dealt with. In terms of now, if we don't have PENSUM functioning optimally, it's also going to impede the utilization, I mean the assistance that we can be able to provide through to department on the use of official languages. And as we know that the 2nd of May was the deadline for the department to make sure that they have a language policy in place, and then also the establishment of language units. And so we will be providing a report on how many departments have actually been able to put that into compliance and so forth. But this is quite critical, and also the establishment of the South African Language Practitioners Council, because then that's a critical structure to enable the translation to take place. But also what we're doing is that we're looking at language technologies that can be able to enable the translation to take place much more quicker and in a seamless way. And so the SA Language Practitioners Council, currently, it's given the freezes in terms of the training, we were not able to have an increased budget. And so therefore, but we are going ahead in establishing it, but not as a separate entity at this point, but to make sure that we can still be able to fast track the setup of this. And once we're able to get more budget, then we can be able to have it spin off as a separate entity. So that's what's in progress currently. And also what is critical is setting up the provincial structure to make sure that we have fair representation and strong structure that can allow in terms of the language unit in the provinces. And so we're looking at strategies of how we can strengthen those structures. And unfortunately with PEMSA the way it is, that also means that the language unit, I mean the provincial structures also suffer as a result. And so we're looking at different ways of whether we can bring fence funding for them while we sort out the issues with PEMSA or without making in order to make sure that the work still is taking place in the provinces. And then priority number 8, 9 is the public entity governance. And I alluded to this area that we are centralizing the governance policy manual for the entire sector. So if you're looking for a procurement policy, you can be able to get it from the centralized database that can be applied by the different entities of the DAC. If you're looking for how to do delegations of authority, you can be able to get it from a policy manual. And also, standardizing the delegation of authority so that it allows the appropriate approvals to take place. And that also helps to minimize irregular expenditure within the entity. And then shareholder contacts to be streamlined. And most importantly, you know, and this is a problem, we have entities that are small. Let's say they get 10 million and they spend 2 million on money fees, which doesn't actually make sense. So part of the solution is how do we have shared services, functions such as audit and risk committees or internal audit units that could cover a number of entities, and also with marketing and communication units, because then you are able to collectively use the economies of scale to be able to provide those services without encumbering small entities with a huge compliance load. Because the result of that is that if now they spend 20% of the budget on audit, how much more are they going to be able to spend on self-delivery and programming? So that's a problem that we are trying to deal with, but also with Treasury, because Treasury can be able to cover some of the audit costs, especially for the smaller entities, so to be able to see how we can then allow them to cover that and free up the budget for service delivery. And then the national day, I spoke a little bit about this area, to say how do we move from an events-driven approach to a more programmatic, meaningful programmatic approach. Because now, when National Day comes, we are happy to celebrate that, but what comes in before that? And what comes in after that? And what problem is it addressing? And so forth. So we're trying now to develop that programmatic approach, and also to increase the repertoire of approaches to create more inclusive ways of celebrating National Day, and making sure that we get more and more people participating in the National Day. And then what we've also done is that the National Days have now been managed transversally within Program 2, and then if it deals with youth issues, then you can be able to engage with the youth unit. And Women's Day will be able to engage with the women's unit, but also when you deal with heritage, then you deal with the heritage unit. But it's a standalone within program one, to be able to drive and coordinate the National Day with the programmatic approach. And then the last priority is archives and records management. This is a big problem in the sense that I mean, we've seen the state of archives around the country. And so this is a critical element that we are looking at and saying, how do we mainstream the archiving and record management in all our activities in the sector? But beyond that, across government, making sure that the record management is done effectively. And so we're developing guideline documents and also rolling out communication campaigns to create necessary awareness. So for example, this week, the DM has been running the National Archives Week. And so she's been across Limpopo and to be able to raise the awareness and be able to say why is it important to be able to maintain our archives and our records. But also linked to this would be the digitization of collections, because with the collections sometimes through wear and tear can be destroyed. So how do we prevent that by digitizing these? And so for example, the Rivonia trial takes a bit. worked with France in actually digitizing them and preserving those records, because with the technology of the XFL is now obsolete, and therefore if we don't have the technology to play the XFL, we'll lose the content. And so therefore we've then engaged in the program of digitization. So those honorable members are the broad areas that we cover in our strategic plan, and then we can be able to also link with each of the strategic outcome oriented goals to the strategic framework in terms of the NDP and the MTSF to be able to highlight which outcomes. Then I won't go into detail into this, and my colleagues will also be able to talk to, okay, so this is also just an indication of the outcome 14 indicators in the MTSF that we are now, that is part of our ADP. And then also in terms of the targets that are linked to the estimate of national expenditure indicators, so that because the APP needs to link to the budget, the strategic plan needs to have APP, the APP is being linked to the budget, so that exercise has taken place, and then ensure that the targets are in line. And then lastly, we've also set performance indicators for our entities to say these are the indicators that they can be able to use in order to make sure that it's streamlined and that we are singing from the same hymn sheet. And so I will stop at this point, and then perhaps I request my colleagues to now look at the ADP elements for the different programs.
Well, thank you for your part of the presentation, but I would request that whoever is going to be dealing with the ADP, we are going to give you 20 minutes because it's taken up time.
There are a couple of programs in English, so I'll try and be as brief as possible. I will do two, and then my colleagues from Heritage and Administration will follow. This is the institutional governance program, and speaking, this now speaks in practical terms to the overview that the acting DG provided. So just to give you a sense in terms of structure, program two is institutional governance, and we deal with social cohesion, international relations, and of course the critical issues of institutional governance, including infrastructure as well. So our key program projects are community conversations. We enter 33 conversations, and again, this is a critical part of our social cohesion program to get people talking to each other about what worries them, about what's impacting on their communities. The most important thing is to come up with solutions in a jointly structured way, so that it's not just handing over problems to government, but actually communities working together to find solutions. In terms of advocating social cohesion, we have a series of social cohesion advocates, each working in particular sectors that join us in our efforts to expand our remit in working social cohesion beyond just governments, but into the private and other civil society sectors as well. We create platforms for these advocates on an annual basis to ensure that they're given opportunities to actually implement their role as social cohesion advocates, and largely we created 10 such platforms, and this year further 10 platforms will be created. With about to moral regeneration, as the FDD pointed out, we have a long-term relationship with the moral regeneration movement, and we have provided a range of support, and this year we'll be focusing on programs in the Pogo, the Northern Cape, and the Western Cape in partnership with the moral regeneration movement. Projects for targeted groups also report into Program 2, and as the acting DG had pointed out, this is a critical area of our work. Now, our approach to this is very much to mainstream, and you'll see how some of that takes place as we move forward, for example, into the NGE aspect. But our aim in this year is intended to support flagship programs that speak to issues of youth, women, and people with disabilities. So, for example, we'll continue our relationship with the Field Band Foundation, which is a very powerful initiative to bring young people together in constructive artistic relations, to look at programs in terms of Youth Month and school holiday programs in Northwest Province, and starting to look at really recognizing women legends in our sector and creating specific theatre productions for people with disabilities. So this is a small area of work, but as it begins to populate itself through the rest of the department, you begin to see a major focus, as the DG has pointed out, in terms of women, youth, and people with disabilities. term of art education programs, as has been mentioned, this is now under the ambit of a much larger schools program, but we have a framework agreement with the Department of Education that allows us to do a lot of collaborative work with them. We continue to be supportive to the massive SASE program, the South African School Corps, ICFA, curriculum enrichment programs on music, and also a new partnership with the Department of Water Affairs called Basalesi, which will utilize arts and culture to really promote water conservation. So this is really using arts and culture as a tool to get social messages across. International relations, as the acting DG pointed out, the seasons continue to be a key aspect of our program, working with the UK and China seasons this year and the Russian season coming up as well. And of course, continuing our programs of bilateral and multilateral relations. The Charter on African Cultural Networks, which was ratified, has very much been a huge focus of our work this year. As the acting DG pointed out, has resulted in a major platform being identified as African Month, which is a multidisciplinary platform to celebrate Africa in South Africa. And further, BRICS continues to be a major focus of our efforts this year. So Africa Month is happening right now with programs all over. There's fashion show, for example, in Mpumalanga later this week. There's been film festivals in Limpopo, a massive street parade, which opened Africa Month in Chwane. And so it really is a three-year commitment by the department into the NTF to really create a platform to celebrate Africa in South Africa, also to strengthen those bilateral relations with the continent, which is so incredibly important. In terms of governance, our critical issue here is, as the DG has pointed out, is that the bulk of our resources go into these institutions. So we need to ensure that there are functional councils in place, and that the structures that we set in place that allow institutions to talk to each other and to talk to us and to talk to the minister happen. So we have a range of sector forums, we have chairperson forums, we have CEOs forums, and of course, on above that, the day-to-day engagement with institutions. We speak to the CEOs, we speak to the CFOs to really help and support them in the initiatives, and of course, as the acting DG put it out, important instruments such as the creation of shared policy databases are really going to be a core focus of our work this year. And fundamentally, the consolidation of governance of the Bundi Mafia into the Mafia Foundation, which will also deal with one of the lingering problem institutions that we've had, and of course, the acting DG has spoken to the issues of PAMSEL, which are an ongoing matter for the Department of Arts and Culture. In terms of infrastructure, we've had some real challenges with regards to both the management and expenditure issues of the infrastructure. We really aim to develop a more credible process, capacitated with new resources, that begin to look at user asset management plans in terms of CIAMA, the management and oversight of all infrastructure programs, and of course, improving internal management. And we currently have a turnaround strategy that's been discussed at the moment that deals with a clear policy for additional capacity and just improved functionality of the infrastructure components, because as DDG has pointed out, we've actually centralized infrastructure administration under Program 2 for the first time this year. And that, Chairman, seems to be the end of this particular presentation. And if the committee indulges, I may just move right into the second presentation. Thank you. ATPD is a unit that essentially manages both language matters and cultural development. And we essentially are structured in a way that ensures that we look at the issues of the sector, that we look at issues of nation building, that we look at the issues of the activity that pointed out about the productive, inclusive and diverse sector, but also looking at issues of capacity. We also have a series of institutions who are part of our budget in the Community Century Program too. Some of our critical programs for the year is the continued administration of the Language Literacy Program, which provides working through institutions across the country, opportunities for people who are interested in professional language practitioners, professional education. We aim to have 320 literacies this year and every year in the 3-year cycle. Our ongoing programs are very service-oriented, and in some respects quite a hidden aspect of our work is we provide translation and editing services to whole of government. We do a lot of terminology development across a range of different fields, including arts and culture, mathematics, life orientation, that essentially ensure that all of our official languages remain up to date, and that the terms, they don't fall out of use because they are no longer able to describe the reality that modern practice requires. We will strengthen the regulation of language practitioners. Unfortunately, as Acting DG has pointed out, we did not get the additional financing for the establishment of the council. Nonetheless, we're moving ahead with the regulations, and there are a series of plans in place that as we begin to raise money, we may not have the money in this NDF for the actual establishment of the council itself, and we can continue to do some of its functions. As the Acting DG has pointed out, a critical area of our work is human and language technology. We're beginning to embrace technology as an enabler of multilingualism. Ultra translation is a major program that's operated across multi-years, and we're developing software systems that allow for machine translation. We developed the English Pitonga, apologies for the pronunciation, system last year, and this year we'll continue to do that work with the Tintana. Further, with the Wazi multilingual speech technology, we have a very interesting presentation, welcome to that. The aim here is a very exciting program that we're doing in collaboration with the South African National Library for the Blind, is to develop text-to-speech systems that allow access in literature. We're working with Xhosa, Hebrew, English and Afrikaans, at the moment specifically focused on the blind community. With regard to cultural development, as the Acting DG has pointed out, the notion of the economic opportunities presented by arts and culture is a key focus in the department. And the key issue this year is to really fully launch the Zambia Golden Market Portal, which creates an opportunity through the internet to both promote the work of cultural producers throughout the country, but also to act as almost a centralized procurement database that governments will be using to procure cultural services and cultural events. We support a very large number of cultural events, 116 last year. In this year, we will continue to support major national and regional flagships, and more importantly than that, actually create catalytic opportunities for centers through open calls. There's been a lot of work to really innovate and make those open calls a lot more accessible. The call is open throughout the year, and we have a threshold which essentially means we can process smaller applications under 100,000 in 2 weeks, and the larger value applications we will consider in quarter. We obviously get inundated with proposals because we never have enough money, and I'm sure you'll be hearing about those some examples, but we are trying to make the system a lot more accessible to artists across the country. Human ventures, this is very much consistent with the present and to say that youth artists, their artists secure locally and internationally. So we provide opportunities through a Bundy Golden Economy for both local and international touring ventures, whether something as small as an artist being invited to a local festival or as large as being invited to an international opportunity, and we support elements of those costs. And again, the standard entry innovation, which is they can make these applications in the time. We review large applications quarterly and applications of less than 100,000 every 2 weeks. Public art has been a major focus. We have 9 projects going, which have been identified by the individual provinces. We continue to use the open call system to ensure that art comes to people, that we don't just expect people to come into dedicated art spaces. And we continue to work in the field because it's so important for us to use art to beautify public spaces, but also speak to people in their community. The Art Bank. Last year, we had agreements with the National Museum that in this pilot phase, the Art Bank will be based in Bloemfontein, in the National Museum structure. And this year, we'll be having a national call for submissions and curating work and having a launch exhibition. A very important aspect of our work, which is very much in line with the manifesto, is to really refocus on community. So there's a major level of investment this year and across the NDF in both structures of community art centers, but also community art programs. The focus will be in the refurbishment and development of existing centers, especially in rural areas and townships, but also developing new infrastructure when necessary and very critically programming in those particular centers. It's not useful just to have an empty building. We need to create that community input. Developing new audiovisual products that celebrate liberation and struggle heroes, which is an outcome 14 indicator, really starting to see that the audiovisual media in our environment really celebrates the people that have made such an important contribution. Continuing to work with sector partnerships because it is we recognize that we can't do this work alone. So major initiatives like National Bookings, Moshito, the Culture and Creative Industry Federation, our work with the Design and Dialogue will continue in this year as our effort to work with the sector, obviously also to promote local content development and professional capacity in the arts. We will continue to work with programs to support reading and writing and our International Book Week, the South African Literary Awards, and of course participation in various book fairs. Internationally, the Venice Biennale will work in close partnership with International Relations on the season. Our touring measures reach internationally as well. And of course, the very critical Africa Month, which has a major corporate program. As the TG has pointed out, Africa Month is a very major engagement for the department, so all branches are eventually involved in the delivery of this platform. And I think that there have been some very important shifts in the prime year. As we started to look at Matika, it was very much a physical piece of infrastructure, and we've changed that approach to have it a much more programmatic element. And a key issue this year is about incubators and over the NGS aligned to the priorities to really think about the training and development of young professionals, but also the creation of local content. So we aim to have a whole series of incubators, targeting them largely with our performing arts institutions in key areas, and we'll be rolling out this program with the MTS. We've awarded the tender for the Cultural Observatory to Nelson Mandela Bay University, and this observatory will help us do ongoing research in the sector to help us to monitor and evaluate key programs so that we really begin to create a knowledge base of our sector which we've not had before. In 2014, we concluded a benchmark cultural mapping study, which is the first of its kind in the country, and the observatory will begin to take this work forward and make sure that we're not just doing, but that we're thinking about what we're doing, but that we're also able to report effectively on the progress that we've made in the sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is the representation on Program 1, and Program 1 includes the ministry, and it includes the Office of the DG. Corporate services, which has got other state functions under that, including HR, marketing, communication, auxiliary services, all the your support functions are included under corporate services, and you've got the office of the CFO. So this presentation includes the financial part of that part. When you get to this, time and portion, I'm going to ask the CFO to do that. Okay, and the purpose of the program one is that it's a provision of leadership, you know, management and support functions to the minister, to GM, DG and department, and this is a critical focus of the admin program that is delivering against the following, you know, sectoral strategic goals. And the strategic goals are, you know, a transformed, coherent, and developed and focused sector. I mean, this, the ADG has actually mentioned them in his presentation. Also, the second one is the nation building through effective social cohesion, which he also mentioned. The sound government's modernized systems and processes, professional and capacities as an architecture sector. All this he actually mentioned in his presentation, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through each one of them and just how we're going to deliver to each strategic focus. And the first one is around to drive integrated and joint outcome-based training, monitoring, and evaluation across the sector. And this is going to link to the Office of the Ministry, Office of the Deputy Minister, Office of the DG, and it's just around, you know, the number of programs or number of programs that they're going to be conducting. And also looking around the JCAPP and the annual service delivery improvement plan, and that we're going to make sure that they get approved. The annual marketing communication implementation plan, which I think the ADG spoke about when we talked about how we're going to make sure that that we have moved the national days into program one. So we need to make sure that, you know, all those are marketed and communicated in the right way. Quarterly report and implementation of annual marketing and communication implementation plan.
And also, my colleague here spoke around the public participation programs that help. So we're going to, in terms of the strategic objectives, this is how we're going to measure ourselves, you know, at the end of the term. To facilitate an enabling and coherent policy, legislative and regulatory environment for agriculture sector. And this is just around the annually updated sectoral, you know, policy database that we're going to ensure that throughout, you know, as we go on, we're going to make sure that the database is in fact updated. Okay? And then the other thing is around the use of national base, which was emphasized as well as a platform for promoting constitutional values, nation building and social cohesion. And around that we wanna have the annual program for hosting and celebrating national and historic days approved. And that is something that we focusing on heavily. And for telling the call and implementation of annual program for hosting and celebrating the historic days. The other objective that we're focusing on is to ensure compliance and sound governance. And I think my colleague can take you through that one because there are things on the science side.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. One of the important things in terms of compliance, Chair, is the impact which a government institute. So we have a department, we are saying we want to ensure 100% compliance and sound governance. And this, in terms of our schedule there, you can see that we say that even in 15 and 16, we want 100% compliance key round to be measured at level 3 or above. Highest score is level 4, that is, when we are at level 4, it means we are 100%. We are complying with all policies and regulations. So we are saying, in our first year, in terms of improving performance, we want to be 3 out of 4, which is about 75%. And as we move forward into 16 and 17, we say 50% kill well area measured at level 4. So meaning that in the following financial year, we should at least be reaching 100% compliance. And then we're going to be consistent in the following MTF year 2017 and 18. Secondly, we're also talking about the strengthening of financial resource base and resourcing mechanism for the arts and culture sector. Our performance indicator in this instance is to be our annual report on implementation of centralized funding model for the sector. So what are the targets? In the medium term, we are saying in the year 15 and 16, annual report on implementation of the centralized annual report on the implementation of the centralized funding model for the sector. In 16-17, we are saying the same report must be produced in terms of centralized funding for the model for the sector, and the same in the outer year 17 and 18. The 18DG has also talked about the issue of empowerment. So we are saying as a department, we want to drive down financial management and controls across the sector. One of the performance indicators is the 100% of total value of percentage of total value of procurement awarded to BE compliant service providers. So as an answer is saying at least 70% of our procurement must go to the BE. Triple BEE in the next medium term expenditure period. The other government indicator is percentage of total procurement spend awarded to black women-owned businesses. The 18DG has already alluded that our target is 30% in the MTEF period. Our next government indicator is percentage of goods and services procurement spend on local content. As you know, we want to improve economic growth, and one of the strategies is to buy it locally and be proud of South African. As DAC, we said the controller framework and policy approach should be developed. So in the first year, we are going to develop a policy on how we are going to empower locally produce businesses. In the second year of the medium term, we are going to improve on the percentage baseline as we have studied in the development year. Then there will be also in the outer year percentage improve in terms of the baseline as outlined in the NDM period.
Now,
how does
the last night talk to IT and also to HR, and this for IT is just to strengthen and enhance the internal process flows and systems. And here the performance indicators will be approved integrated enterprise-wide ICT and architecture plan and schedule implementation. And we spoke about our APTs and the plan here is to have, you know, an integrated enterprise-wide ICT, which is across, you know, the sector. And also the last one is to build AI applicability and promote a culture of high performance. And I think we all agree that when you look at everything that we need to achieve, it all involves, you know, people. So we need to have the right people to be able to deliver to our strategic intent. So we say that as a percentage of total VATLS count employees on an internship program, we targeting 10 in this term, and percentage of VAT, percentage of VAT compensation budget spent on training and development, which is 1%, and also percentage of women employed at SMS level, we targeting 50, and I'm happy to say that, you know, we at 50 at this stage. Percentage of people with disability employed, which is the target is 2%. And we have in fact achieved the 2% legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and colleagues. I will just run through these items without necessarily focusing on each and everyone in the interest of time. But just to think that the Healthcare Social Innovation Bench is composed of two chief directorates, East Heritage as well as National Archives. And of course, the strategic objective is provide policy leadership for effective and efficient management of North African heritage and heritage, to also transform heritage and heritage landscape, and establish strategic partnerships to leverage resources for multi-impact programs, build capacity and enhance skills to strengthen the management of heritage, but also our key responsibilities to promote national identity and nation building, as well as social cohesion through heritage and heritage programs. We also support about 15 heritage institutions. Now, coming direct to the issue of national identity, the Bureau of Heralds, which is within the French heritage, involved in the installation of flags and flagpoles in schools in the public of South Africa, in the 2014-2015 financial year, was able to install about 14,415 flags. This year, we are planning to install about 2,000 flags due to budget constraints in the country. And then also we are responsible for distribution of handheld flags, normally during national days and events that take place. And also these flags are handed over to participants and attendees as an expression of identity as well as a way of unifying the nation. So about approximately 163,906 handheld flags were distributed in the previous financial year, and 100,000 were distributed in 2015-2016 financial year. In addition to the flags and handheld flags, we also distribute posters and booklets. And as to schools, as well as the national anthem, which has been translated into 11 official languages, I must stress this, honorable members, that if we translate the national anthem into 11 official languages, it's not to prove that it must sound in those 11 languages, but we're trying to enhance the understanding, because people see the national anthem with more meaning if they do understand the meaning of what the national anthem stands for. Also, the preamble of the South African Constitution, for that the people of South Africa remember where this country comes from, and also the values that are enshrined in our constitution, and how people should also live those days. We also have national symbol passports passport booklets which are also distributed to schools. Also, this is more about ensuring that there is deep understanding of the national symbol. But also, why package this in the passport booklet? It's just to ensure that it's something that people can carry with and they can, at their own spare time, just read for the enhancement of their understanding of what this country is all about. Today, 2,758 schools have issued this, the poster, the book, and the booklet listed above. 2015 target is 6,000 schools that you want to be accepted. And then there is this project, this legacy project, which is about the transformation of the heritage landscape to ensure that we build museums, monuments, and memorials to pay homage to those who fought in the struggle for liberation, but also people who have contributed in shaping the memory of this country. So one of the key projects, well, I'm not going to mention the number of them, but it's quite important that I single out some of the key flagship projects, like the National Heritage Monument and Hills Echo, which will include a monumental parade of more than 400 life-size cultural bronze representations of individuals who contributed to South Africa's struggle for democracy and liberation. It's a rare phenomenon where you would find so many things in one space, where you would be able to look at these statues reflecting the pre-colonial as well as apartheid of people who actually existed during those times. Of course, many people who were fighting for the liberation of this country. It will be the head of Eka in particular will be situated in Skontroof. It's proposed that it will comprise 27 meter pillars connected by an aerial walkway, each pillar representing the four pillars of the struggle for democracy. So this is being said to be a very iconic a monument that posterity will be able to appreciate what the forebears have done to liberate the country. But this has spoken about the fact that we are now in the process of finalizing everything in terms of the access to land so that we can begin to do work. In addition to this project, there is the Liberation Heritage Route project, which is actually being discussed at the IMC level, and also is the project that will soon be going to cabinet. One of the key issues that have come out in the discussion of the IMC is the liberation movement in museums, because there is a view that as much as we have established museums in the post-colonial and post-apartheid South Africa, but there seems not to be a museum that is dealing specifically with liberation movement. We're also looking at the archives, Liberation Heritage Archives, as the DG has indicated, that it's not just all about monuments and museums, but also other forms of memorializing our heroes and heroines. And currently also we're looking at three other projects in the province. We are actually getting that information from provinces so that we can also move on with that particular aspect of our work. There's work in progress, like the Dubelik as a project, which will be completed at the end of June, which comprises of amphitheater, access driveway and parking area, the Wesleyan Church in Bayouk, where the African National Congress, one of the oldest liberation movements in Africa, was established. It's the exhibition content and design are pending final approval before installation. We know the challenge about the Owa Tambo project in Gandolo, which actually was less Aston. So we are, the project is on hold pending the discussion with the province, the municipality, and the IBT. The mapping of the Khoisan Heritage Route site is also a project which is also paying homage to Khoi and Sen communities in the country. Then the Basak program is also another program that we do as part of human capital development. The award is 77 Basak in 2014-2015. In 2015-2016, we're looking at 77 Basak again. And then the Living Heritage Project, we have developed a policy which is also going to cabinet, and we also want to, through this program, recognize living human treasures. And living human treasures are individuals who have knowledge and skills in living heritage, in oral traditions, customs, rituals. So we want to ensure that this is documented, but also that they are recognized so that we can always depend on them for the transmission of this knowledge to posterity. Also, we would like to also have this oral tradition of South Africa. And then the archives.
I'm taking this seminar for the past year and some presentations. I see that your presentations are very repeated and that's quite interesting. But it was time constraints because the committee still has to engage.
I have to say that in terms of the archives, I'm not going to repeat what the DP has said, but to say that there is we are looking at investigating the possibility of a conditional grant that should begin to address all the issues that the DP spoke about. The annual oral history content is one way also of ensuring that we capture the national memory because we know that some of the archival documents they're protected. And that the oral history and oral traditions could actually assist in just settling those gaps. Digitization, the people have spoken about it, also in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through it. And then also, we are working on the revamp of the National Automated Archival Information Retrieval System, which is about to be completed, and also improving the website and the archive. And also, we are finalizing the ASHRAE project, which is about heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems in the archives, because it's very important that the documents are kept at a particular temperature and at a particular condition. Libraries, trans and 50 new libraries, maintained and dispatched and distributed to the public libraries, 20 new libraries will be built in the country, and 50 existing libraries will be upgraded and maintained. Let me stop here, sir.
I'll just try to proceed with what I have said before slide. I'll just look at the slide that you asked a few questions. Firstly, in terms of the 2015 MTF baseline, this amount retail trust away from the Zambri Golden Economy Strategy Project and the Department Long Saving Vision 2. As well as amount retailers tried to work correcting the economic reclassification of the MG strategy project and filling of key service delivery support tools. In terms of the budget reduction, Chair, we have asked, in the first year of 15 and 16, was the reduction of 51.9 million. In 15 and 17, 81.8, and in 20 and 18, 50.5. This slide shows the allocations for the department in the MTF pillar, which in the current year we are at 3.9 billion, 16-17 4.1 and 17-18 4.3. If you look at the increment, there is budget increment, but as I indicated in that slide, there are certain areas which there were budget reduction and reprioritization. This slide shows you the budget allocation in terms of the economic classification, where you can see that compensation, goods and services, continual grants, agencies, institutions, and so on. This slide graph tries to show the members that 83% of the budget is spent outside the department, and only 70%, which amounts to 6.7 million, is spent by the department. The rest is transferred to the provinces and entities. This photo is an extension to show you in terms of economic classification where the spending will be. The slide shows you how funds will be spent within the GAC, that's 6.7 million, which is basically 34% is for employees, 1% is capital assets, and 65% is goods and services. This slide is trying to show you the summary of the budget allocation, where you can see the department baseline, especially for the conditional grant to the provincial or the DORA allocation. There is a baseline increase in 15 and 16 of 213, in 16 and 20 of 190 million, and 17 and 18 of 158 million. This is after the reclassification and reduction that I've indicated earlier. This last is an exercise that was done to show where the reductions were effected overall before arrived at the central budget that was presented at the previous slide. It shows you, because we have some vacant food, rather we reduced our budget by 1 million in the first year, 23 million in the second year, and 24 million in the final MTF period. The MGCP strategy reduction are also indicated as seen on the slide. Goods and services, capital assets, all the reductions are indicated as capital requested to see. And this continues until we arrive at the total budget that I indicated that we are at 3.9, 4.1, and 4.3 the MTF, and I can give you the presentation.
No, thank you very much. I thank you for the presentation, all of them. They were quite clean. We would have been interested to listen more about what could happen to the elephant child from the court. But I remember your time now to give the presentation. Honorable Kunabar, Honorable Kaui, Honorable Mpapa Kuban, Honorable Lani, Honorable Stowe, Honorable Madi, in the different.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think that's a mouthful, and I do not always understand everything, but I think that you are there to help us out. The first thing, I want to know, what is your relationship to the Department of Education? Because there is a lot of things which are also on their field. When you're busy with training with languages especially the language, the development of smaller languages you mentioned, and I want to know how are you incorporated with basic education. I think that is where we will start at the end of the day. The burden is also available for language programs who help students. And you mentioned in the first presentation the number of students is 522 students, and then in the last presentation you mentioned 77. So I do not know how is compatible between these. If you just can give us more information about that. And then when the students are finishing their training, their courses at university, what happens then to them? Are they incorporated into schools, or now they're trained in a certain language? What happens to that student after finishing the program? And what happens to the bursaries? They get bursaries, but they pay it back at the stage, or how are you going to develop the whole situation? You also mentioned about the job creation, and that worries me. You said 93% is temporary jobs, and I want to know, a temporary job is a job, because people are in a job for 2 or 3 months and then they're out of the job. so they can't plan for their own future. And that remains a problem in South Africa at this stage. There is no, that is not job creation. For me, that's not a problem. You help certain people out for a month or two and then he's out of a job again. So he falls back into the poverty he was before. So we must uplift our people and maybe it's difficult in your department to create jobs for people. I don't know, but you must help us and tell us what happened. And then you also mentioned at the stage there are 14,000 jobs you created. Is that part of the 93% or is that permanent jobs? And if it's permanent jobs, that 14,000, what kind of jobs is it? You help the people with. And where are you putting these people? Because that is, I don't know, is all the things you've done is not, for me, permanent type of thing. It's always, they are busy for a while and then you see and then what then? So I'm worried about that, so you must think what answers are regarding that. You also talk about infrastructure. Now, all over South Africa, there are buildings, there are infrastructure, there are culture centrums, if you can call it that. I visited a couple of them. The one is in Golden Gate in the Free State, a beautiful place there on the mountain or just under the mountain. But and that is at the most of these places, there's not really things happen at that culture center. That is a huge, nice place. And then there's one or three people busy inside doing something. Culture things. Maybe a small thing they made by themselves. But that's all. And then this huge building is basically unoccupied. And that is also a waste of manpower, a waste of taxpayers' money to have these beautiful places, but of no use. And there's also one in Mpumalanga. There's a beautiful view, a huge place, but nothing of it is happening there. Moretele, in the Northwest province, they have land. They fence the land. They build structures inside. And then the community is unhappy about it and they burn it down. So I can't see that we go forward if such things happen. We must utilize these places. We have it. So we must do something to get people there and so that it means something to the communities, that it is some kind of income to the communities, and also that we tell the people more about the history of that area. I think you had it in mind, but I can't see that it happened at this stage.
I'm sorry,
Mr. Kulabani.
Sorry?
Mr.
Kulabani. I think I've already asked about 8 questions.
Well, I've got them all.
I'll allow you to ask one you want.
Okay, just ask for you. Thank you. Now let's see what one is important. I'll try this one. See, this time I'll come back. Okay, my last question is, I will say first, thank you. You mentioned a flag pose and flag, and that is a very good idea. But the very same idea was in the Department of Sport and Recreation. They also tell us they put poles and flags and everything up in on school premises, and now you come and you tell us the very same story. So, who of you is doing it at the end of the day? And who's the responsibility of it? Thank you.
Okay,
that was
thanks.
Thanks,
Shabbat.
Thanks
for having me. I'm apologizing for my little and I don't my community video or going to apologize for me. The channel I'm using the Shabbat of Cancer. And it's finished the invitation for us. And certainly did me some of the things and some of my issues will have been directed to the political head. But I'm sure the department will find a way of between them and the minister or the minister head of this issue, because they will have more appropriate responded to by either the minister or the community. Let me start by the usual through the department. Which begins to finance this document, which is Program 1 Administration, on page 5. It says on the strategic objective to drive sound financial management and control across the sector. But when it goes to detailing the indicators for the media and then try to the essays. It's talk about procurement. Procurement related to PPE, procurement related to women owned businesses and goods procured in Finland. And to me, these two things do not agree to each other. You talk about financial management, but your targets are procurement local, procurement to empower PPE, procurement to empower women. I would have thought that this needs to be talking to issues that talk to your system of managing your finances. We have been talking to your audit and stuff like that, but it's not our department. I don't know how this has happened and why do you have this as an objective, but the target is just something at empowerment when you are talking about spouse, financial management, you are talking about financial control. Yes, your target seems to empowerment. And then to happen, the issue that I would have liked the minister to respond to. The first one is, I'm sure the department will deal with this one, the issue of the national anthem. The first time they will hear that the song is going to be translated. But then when it gets translated, don't sing it. I'm not going to be using this question. Because, you know, if you run the top of government, the national anthem is translated, they'll sing it in that language. If it is, all of the Africans will sing it in that Africans. Are we not going to be contradicting ourselves when practically things begin to happen on the ground? Which leads me to asking something else about that guy who keeps on breaking the song, don't talk about your song, but what is the department doing about it? It has been 104 cases now, and it's starting to get, this international platform. And we always see this convention in the paper. They have done it again, they have done it again. What can we do about it? Because with this foundation, we are going to get it. It's going to happen. Somebody is going to get to the national or international platform and start saying the whole national anthem is issued. Because it's translated. It's an official document of government, it's translated. And you are talking about the Hero Watch National Heritage Monument, Hero of Ike. Let's caution that this may not be one side yet. For what has happened up to now, from where we got our independence, 1994 up to now, it's like there was just one part, one side contributing to the liberation of the people of South Africa. That is the one side story that the people of South Africa get into. That is what I would like the minister to respond to say, how are we going to ensure that this is all encompassing? It doesn't just reflect this distortion which is continuing to happen. Chairperson, this is a very good thing. It talks about our heritage, our history, and we have to preserve for future generations. For your information, Chairperson, my dear friend was saying that the oldest liberation movement in South Africa and Africa is the African National Congress. The second oldest is the Chiefs. The third oldest is the National Congress, which is 40 years ago. But because this thing, because we are talking here about people of South Africa, not political parties, we are talking about documenting information for the people of South Africa. But when these things keep on getting into giving people one side of the story, that is going to change with us in the future. That is what the next generation will be, which is not the case. There are other issues which, as government, you are responsible for. You are responsible for me as IFP, you are responsible for her as ANC, you are responsible for her as DA, you are responsible for all of us, not all of us. What I'm saying to you is, how are you going to ensure that you actually get practically responsible for all of us as citizens of country and not just a political party in government? Lastly, this thing gets spoken about, but unfortunately, up to now, The Honourable Minister and Dumbledore is okay, and I'm still going to go back to this. I did raise it last year, yesterday, and last week it did come out from one of the members of the House and the person said, the issue of misdemeanors, which is another very important thing. I was listening to the Honourable State President, when he attended the function in Russia. And when he was interviewed later on, he was saying what he had observed in Russia was something wonderful, the patriotism of the Russians about what they are doing for their country. Which is what they need to be achieving in South Africa. But what is the deal with that is national days get hijacked. They become political parties, rallies. Now, what we need is, what is the official position of government in the sense of saying, when we attend national day, are you allowed? Because previously, in some years, there was a time when there were adverts saying, don't wear political party regalia, don't wear this, don't wear that. And we are going to attend a function every citizen of South Africa. But this has not been properly addressed. It does have to be properly addressed. How do you get there? When Trump was organized by government, who is responsible for what? This will even go to the extent of saying, this is Mr. Davis, it's not the national government. Provincial government gets involved, they organize their own country. Local government gets involved, they organize their own country. But I'm telling you, Chesterton, more often than not, this gets addressed, and as a result, we become even party political, even officials where we are supposed to reflect this patriotism in the president of South Africa. Thank you, Chesterton. Can I also say, Chesterton, my life is on that today. I have a question with the Chesterton from I'm talking about it.
Would I allow you to give like a picture, not a picture, but the bulk of your question really required a response by the politician. Maybe it would serve a good purpose for you to convert them into questions. Or you still have an opportunity to ask the next time we meet the department if you can.
Thank you, Chesterton. Mine is just nice and short. The first one is your staff compliment. I see you have acting DGs. There's been long day, the CFO has just confirmed that. Can you get a time frame when are you establishing a full complement of your staff establishment? Secondly, if you could please, I know you worked for the 2% employment on disability. Can you unpack in terms of your invisible disability? Who have you employed? Because what tends to happen is the employment of quadriplegics and paraplegics, and the invisible disability is always left out because it's invisible. And would like to know in that regard, of the 2% in terms of invisible disability, how much have you consumed into your department? The battery story, good to hear about it. It's always, and this is a general question which I've also posed to other departments, what's the criteria in earning this battery, which is always said, those who receive and come recipients of these bursaries are always politically connected. What is the criteria to shelter your back that you have followed? And if you could have it maybe in writing, I don't want an answer now, in writing, what have you followed in terms of ensuring equality and fairness to the South African citizens? I thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Today you seem to be more political. No, thank you very much for the opportunity and I really appreciate the detailed presentation. Just observing something, why do we have so many presentations? the normal circumstances we have 180 on the strategic document which covers also the APP, then you have the financial. That is not what you are seeing in the document. Am I reading something out of this presentation? Maybe I'm looking too much to what I'm observing. It's an observation that I'm sending. You are sending, according to the acting division, 80% of the budget to entities. Why? And in your budget, the bulk, you can go to the financial, the pie chart. Most of your budget goes to personnel.
Mm-hmm.
But you're spending 80% of your budget to transfer into personnel. Mm-hmm. What are these people doing? All the people there, what are they doing? If 80% of the budget goes to transfer, in that session, I want to check, what is it that is done by the department? That cannot be done by the department. That commends you to them. Because our challenge is that when you don't have control over your programs and budget and you are the accounting department to us, most of the time work is not done properly. It's not only you, with other departments where money transfers to provinces. Where money transfers to provinces is not the performance is not as good as when money is in the department nationally. Why do you have so many parasitals? Parasitals, in trading your people, you can see they are not performing to the expectation. They make the department not to be visible, if I may be honest. And we look at the department, that department is not performing yet. It's the parasitals that are not performing. Social cohesion, we're not doing well at all. Last year we got a presentation, or start from last year because it was here since last year. We got a presentation that we're going to do ABCD. I don't know whether it was done, but Nina Lankala or not. I did not see any. I'm not sure if I saw something. We don't do the main. If that's really done by a person, can we pull up our talk in terms of the oversight, because it's compromising the country, almost went to a civil war. That's the that function that is not performed well. I know that it's not only the department. Social cohesion is not something that you can still sit down and do social cohesion. It is done through a different activity. So one is more interested to know what I represent activities that are planned to assist in terms of social cohesion. You have in your presentation cultural development. My question, what are we developing? Because we come with our indigenous cultures, original culture, I'm both Swati and Zulu in me. My people is Zulu. I'm home, they are there. There's nothing developing. My people is Swati. They are there. There's nothing to develop. What you need to do there is to promote and support. Mostly support and promote. What is it that they're developing? Again, do we really believe in that? You. It's a thought-provoking question. Do you believe in culture? You yourself. Because you have to walk the talk. I should be asking the minister this question. Do you believe in culture? Because you can't convince me to do something if you yourself are not doing it. I'm asking now. We're supposed to be doing this presentation in our vernacular. People are still there, but still in this department. Mm-hmm. I said the same thing last year. Mm-hmm. Because you believe in culture. Maybe in doing that, it's something that you must first start internalizing it. I'm just listening to the nice, good English that you're speaking. I'm just listening at the culture. Where is the culture here? Is the language promotion? I'm only hearing English. We have 11 official languages. it would have been very much interesting if one was presenting in Zulu or African or Song or Fay to show that believe what you are saying. People must talk. Perfect talk. I'm very serious about this because it has to be internalized, maybe not as a community. It's what we need to promote as a community, especially this month, Africa Day or Africa Month. How is this different from FM? If we think promoting our cultures into Africa Month, how is this month different from FM? You and the people that are showing that this is FM, this is May. I would, for example, say, maybe you propose that the whole of May, I'm a debate in Parliament, if we do that, done in Venezuela. It will also force us to want to understand these other languages because the interpretation sometimes is not appropriate. It will force me to try and understand Fiji or Africa. But these are the options that may come up. I also say, since we wear our traditional attire, we are very rich. In fact, it would be very much interesting. And also, Key Africa Day, maybe can address the question that has been raised by Honorable Kaur. We promote our culture. Different cultures. I heard that today inviting other nationalities is good. But we've got enough cultures in South Africa. If we can invite all of us to Africa Day, it may minimize the issue of that political parties and these days are used as for political parties. In heritage, what you want to do with heritage. His name, and I'm glad Honorable Paris Bogwane is coming in. Disneyland. Most people know it is a museum of Mickey Mouse. It's far beyond that. There is a museum, an airport, where they promote different cultures. It's very modern. Our young people like it. You get friends, it's like you're going away from the way Mother 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 so. You get to this to one culture like you, German school, are doing their own traditional thing, and get to the next group, doing in a way of falling or enjoying yourself. Learn different cultures. One thing that you may want to know is that you need an airport, like the Emilian airport. Very interesting to have. Instead of calling people to see them, my cultures, which everything, then the last two, the cultural season. I saw you mentioning UK, China, Brazil. When do I know? What is that? We should be South Africa, Mozambique, Ghana, I don't know what is this cultural season. We should not have more than we have not completed learning cultures around Africa. I'm not saying Mozambique is xenophobic, no, but I'm just saying it is more interesting to learn other cultures around South Africa. Maybe it's because I don't know what is cultural season. The last one, you talk about what is it you think? And this is my highest again. I would be more interested to know the root, the Amapat. I know somebody else is interested in the root of Arabic. Paul is just saying you're coming from Swaziland. No, we're not coming from there. I know somewhere Central Africa, somewhere Togo. It would be more interesting to know, you see, where do we come from? Because we claim that we are South African, most of us are not from here, we're from somewhere. As much as we will be doing liberation work, but can we know where we come from? Where is our origin? Those are my questions.
Thank you. If you answer those things, asking you to give us official political words, we have to send the oath of the political team. Honorable Stoke.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'm having a long list of questions which I want to ask, but I'm also very mindful of the time factor. I think it will be very unfair on the department here. From what I've observed, they've been writing and writing and writing. So, an honorable Danini has also asked, I was noting, about 40 questions, one of whom about 8. Mm. And there are other members also, who must also take the bite, you know. So I'm trying to be really mindful of the sentence. So I'm going to ask just one focal question, Honorable Chairperson. But before I do that, it's unfortunate that Honorable Kawi asked the question and then left. But I just need, you see, I'm not in a position to respond on behalf of the minister or the deputy minister. And also because it's a political question, it is about serious political undertones. I think we must actually try to take it upon ourselves to clarify it in his absence, but we tell him also in the context of parliamentary meeting. Because I've got a concern, this question has been coming over and over, and so honorable members will also pay testimony to it. It also came as in the House as a question for oral reply. The minister elaborated quite extensively on it. And then Honorable Kala was also present in the House, so he brings it again to the committee. So I'm also worried to keep it from coming up and coming up. But we have an opportunity also to clarify. That's the simple question.
No, I don't want to elaborate on the issue, but I think
saying
that the minister has been in the House when the minister responded. He sort of trivialized his question. Am I right?
My question to the department is just about the informality of the provincial department. Like you see where I come from, the Northern Cape, we've got the provincial department of sports and culture. And then it does not necessarily mean that in other provinces it's the same. For an example, in the Western Cape, we've got the Department of Cultural Affairs and sports. And in the Northwest, we've got sports, we've got arts and culture, and traditional affairs. So I just wanted to find out, in terms of planning, monetary, and coordination from the national level, does it not affect the planning or the approach of the National Department of Sport and Culture, of arts and culture, as part of their planning and monetary? And how also, to what extent does it affect service delivery and implementation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for being late. I couldn't get earlier flight this morning. Honourable Ramin covered me on the issue of the budget and the right incentives that we spend on personnel and building and talking to the points of building departmental capacity. So I'm covered with that. Last year, the departments were here, they spoke about the dictionary in 11 official languages. And I don't see that being presented here, whether that project is being completed, whether we have the dictionary, feedback on that. On the issue of Africa Day, and I'm loving the ads that we have all over TV and radio of Africa and Africa Day and Africa Unite. My concern is that I don't think the department, I don't think what we are saying as a country is speaking to what we are doing as a country. We go and say we are one in Africa, and a couple of days later we are deporting a whole lot of Africans back out of the country. We say that we don't have borders, and we do, but the borders have been imposed on us, but then at the same time we have illegal immigrants. So I don't think it's a problem to each other. So I think that's really failing in trying to build African inclusion on our continent. In addition, we have law enforcement agencies, which I think we need to focus on, because largely they are the first contact that our other African brothers have with us. For example, I'll give an example. I frequent a street that has very famous restaurants, and there's probably a lot of non-South African, yet African West. But they're also the owners there. I'm not necessarily African, the Italians, at least half of them are probably using the restaurants as a place to smuggle drugs and money laundering for you know. But you'll have like a bus that comes and the workers are dragged out in broad daylight, thrown into vans. So no one questions the owners where your permit or you're allowed to be operating there. So these are the things that we see. And I don't think that's all the purposes in building the equation that we really do want. So that the department talks to law enforcement agencies, all the trainees need to be able to handle those things. I think that's what I was on with. Under bursaries, your graduation percentage of those within your program, and if not, what's your percentage of graduates that you have and how many of them are absorbed into the market? The 350 bursaries that you have for Thailand, does it speak to the needs of what you need as a country? And how did you come up with that? You know, sometimes we just pull things out and we don't know whether that's needed as a country. And one of my favorite hot topics at the moment is the apartheid symbol in public places. And while we appreciate the minister or acting minister establishing a task team, I'm sure by the time the task team comes back and reports, we're going to have a tipping point in our country. The department needs to be more proactive on this matter rather than reactive, setting up securities and setting up task teams. I think that's us being reactive. Our country is reaching a tipping point, and I think the issue with the xenophobia attack, the issues now with the attack on apartheid symbols. And speaking to people are frustrated, people are angry, they're not getting served delivery and things that they can easily take their frustration out of their table. It's easy to take our frustrations over our African brothers and sisters because they are deemed weaker in the country, they're at our mercy. It's the same with these symbols, the consequences are not so low. So my recommendation is that the department amend procedures. I'm also just at a loss at why survivors of apartheid must request or go through a process to have symbols, apartheid symbols being removed. And I think it should be the other way around. It must be the going to remove things. And anyone who wants to object, come and object or take your symbols and go and put it where you think is best. But I think as a survivor, it's the same thing. I've been raped. And then I must make a request to not have a racist picture be shown all over in other places. It's not right. And I think that must be dealt with very harshly. And I'm covered. Thank you,
Jefferson.
Ngasho kule nawo umfanekiso ngomzini lokuba
kuzakwenzeka ntoni selikhaza ziqalile ezantsi kuzo kokuba kuliwe lundini ubhwe izimvo zalo nalo ukuze qhubelelo lunike inkaso kwezicwaniso zesele kuphosisa ngaphambili.
Let me just make my comments because after this I'm not going to comment. Some of the issues will be questions, but some of the issues will comment. And that's why I'm starting off with this issue of language, promotion of indigenous languages. As the members are actually putting it, it is not appropriate when we are under the umbrella of African culture. We need to be seen to really promoting our own. But we are sitting with a major problem even in this commission room. The problem doesn't start, it starts with the chamber, the legislature. In the NA, there is interpretation, but I doubt if it is enough for all languages, the 11th. In the FAOP, I think the same pattern. We still have a difficulty in finding people that are going to assist us understand all the 11 official languages. Let alone interpretation in the committee room. Because what Honorable Gane is saying, if we therefore necessitate that you got the machinery even in the committee room, where they're going to interpret us and we are present in our own language. I just passed a comment here on Gane is because of language barrier, even within the department itself, you know. It is a real big problem because we are not confident. We are saying we are promoting who we are as Africans, but at the same time, the resources are not talking to it. And I think it's an issue that maybe the minister needs to look into. Secondly, I'm worried about the reduction of the budget. I know that all the departments have suffered reduction in the budget. But in a department as small as this one, that is always underfunded. Comparatively speaking, that we've always been lamenting that it is regarded as one of the Cinderella departments. Yet it is carrying such a massive and important mandate. It is a worrying fact. For instance, I don't understand that they finally reduced the budget for personnel because they are vacant. I thought you'd be giving more money in order to be able to fill vacant posts. And taking away money towards the vacant posts is not consistent with the call by the ruling party as a citizen. We need to be thinking creating an environment where people are able. There is a lot of joblessness, and that is not consistent with what we're seeing out there in the public. So maybe we'll be able to answer to me, it didn't make sense at all. And then the other issue is the issue of temper. Please, Action City, just explain to me one thing. What is the status of temper? Constitutionally. Did they report to Parliament or did they report to the Department? What is the definition of their status in terms of the constitution? And if they conflict, how are you handling it? When they appeared before the committee, they were human resource issues that were very complex and causing this board not to function properly and is going to hit at us regarding the promotion of indigenous languages. So please give that to the table so that you know exactly where they stand. Basically, we are the National Council of Provinces here. When you speak, the language that we understand best is the language where you give us a provincial perspective. When you say you've got 500 Basaris, to whom? Where are these? Those that come from Pilate and about the negatives in Bangal, Bangal from my city. She's over 200 and then Bangal will see them. It is the end. Together I mean, I think it is. It gave us a bit of provincial perspective because we then understand the standing of the provinces in relation to your program. Who's next?
We've got 25,000 schools, more or less, in the country. The average is about 40,000. How do you pick the 14,000 radio services and why do you leave out the other radio services? And of the 14,000 radio services in terms of surveillance of lake and the other national identity things, how do you pick them up? How many are they in place and in all other provinces? Not only, how many is it give, I mean, give us the perspective for the future. I'm not going to refer to ATP because of time constraints. But you know, when I'm seeing covering any important, any important, and also the whole issue of incubators, because they've got some targets they've got to push for instance, they, and some of the training look the same. Look the same as I can understand what I'm going to say is for of age. They look the same and I couldn't understand why the different types of something that is almost the same. If you would just explain the concept of this incubation and the portal and the important and whether they actually are expected to pay to get into the portal. Are the subscriptions of it. There are a lot of other questions I can give you, but let me stop there for now. The others, maybe the others will come to the committee to present your annual performance report. As others, we can post to the minister when it comes to the house to answer questions. But let me stop there for now. Thank you very much. You will try to summarize, but only 15 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. So perhaps we'll try to consolidate the basic questions and the language questions. I would defer to some of the questions to my colleague. But perhaps I can start off with the clarity on the incubators and the HGM portal. So the incubator, their purpose is to be able to equip the artist with the technical skills. So for example, if I'm a musician, I'll be given the ability to record my music and be able to then create content. If I'm a filmmaker, I can be able to work on a short film on whatever project. So we are providing the facility to be able to produce local content. And then the key is that once I have that local content, how do I make sure that people buy it? So then Zanzibar Golden Market is enabled to say, take all our spend on the art, culture and heritage related activities across government to be able to present the opportunities for the artists to be able to access the opportunities. So it will not be for a fee when the artist gets registered. So the first step is to register the artist so that you have the database. But the other step is to also make sure that you have the opportunities to be available to these artists that are part of the database. And that way we can then be able to provide that link. So the portal is an opportunity network. And also it addresses some of the wins with the bursary. Now we will also have for those students that are part of the bursary program to be part of the portal so that when you can track the people in terms of the bursary that they're getting. And also during vacation work, they can be able to be integrated in the department where we can be able to provide some opportunity for them to work with the department and the entity during the vacation work. And when they are done, then we can be able to look at placement opportunities. For example, if you're talking about a language practitioner bursary and you find that there are language units across government that require those people, then we already have them in our database because we've given them bursaries and they can be actually placed. And if they're not placed in the public sector, then private sector can also be able to take to come to us and say, I'm looking for a language practitioner, those are also an MTN, I'm a language unit, which I need to translate my ears into different languages or communication into different languages. So that would be a service that then would be available through this kind of portal. So in essence, it's an opportunity network. The incubator is to help the skill of the artist from both the content creation and providing the tools, democratizing access to the tool of creating local content, but also the market, helps them to market their work in a platform for them. And then in terms of some of the questions that Honorable Zamini asked in terms of why so many presentations, we just needed to be able to give the members of the committee a much deeper understanding of the different elements. And with Dr. Hess, the way to do that is I'll cover the product cross aspect, and then the DDT can also then go into the salient detail. But there shouldn't be any further reading to that. It's just to enable the level of detail to be there so that it can allow the members to engage on the content. And then also around the entities, which is Honorable Matthias also looked at, was why 80% of our, so when we unpack this 80%, when we say outside the DSC, so 1 billion out of that 3 billion is about the conditional grant for land use, which goes to the provinces. And that is implemented by the provinces. And then the balance amount would be to the entities. Now the entities, from the policy perspective, the department must be the policy maker. But we have implementation entities, which is then going to be implementing some of the programs. Similarly, Treasury looks at policy, and the PIC and other DBSA are they implementing. So it's the same principle that is being applied here. However, I'm looking at this and saying, are we getting really value for money in the business model that we're getting? Are we getting the right programming that is able to get social cohesion and nation building? And that is why we are taking the process of a white paper to relook at those models to see, are they actually delivering what they are supposed to be delivering? And at least through the consultation, we can be able to come up with a model to say, how do we make our entities very effective? But the principle will stay that we need to be able to have checks and balances, that we need to remain as a policy-making entity, as a department, because you can't be a player, a referee, and at the same time. So you need to then make sure that there's appropriate segregation of duties. Otherwise, then you're going to get into very murky ground when you try to consolidate everything at once. And so the other questions around, perhaps I'll allow my colleagues to cover the questions on Treasury, the three languages, and the Monica.
Thank you very much, members of the board. Your interest in our work is enormously appreciated. The DNC language registry program has been run for a number of cycles, and just as a point of correction, we provide assistance to sign language, but not the registry is not only intended to sign language, it is in fact intended to cover all official languages. The critical thing about this program is that it arose in the context of a policy framework that recognized that we need more trained language professionals, and especially as the Use of Official Languages Act becomes properly implemented, there will be a greater and greater demand for government employees that are language practitioners. And so we're creating a pool that government will be able to draw on. Unfortunately, I don't have a graduation level with me at the moment, but there is a request for a written response on how we administer these groceries, and I'd like to ask the committee if we may submit those graduation rates as part of that written response. With regard to the administration of the groceries, the language groceries in particular work in collaboration with universities. For this current financial year over the 3-year cycle, we'll be working with VIP, UNISA, Limpopo, University of the Western Cape, Nelson Mandela University, and Northwest University. And the discrepancy in figures that was noted is the language groceries, 522, which is well above target. The primary reason for that is the groceries that are administered through UNISA. Because of the distance learning model of UNISA, they are able to administer far more versions than those who have full-time students on hand, but we can provide more detail in the written response. The heritage versions are the slightly smaller versions, and so it's always important to see the difference between the two. On language matters, the critical element about the Language Practitioners Council is to regulate the use of official languages, is to push government to be far more multilingual and have its greater accessibility. The DNC has published its own language policy in terms of the Act, but there is an ongoing need to emphasize to government departments how important it is to have these policies. The minute provided a blanket extension and that expires on the 2nd of May, and we're currently following up consistently. About 57% of departments as of 14th April were complying in the context of promulgating the policies for comment in gazettes and for the Act, but we are definitely behind the curve. And this is a request to the Select Committee. When you see departments that are reporting to you, if you wouldn't mind just raising this issue, it makes a huge difference in terms of compliance. The issue of the dictionaries is, in fact, the dictionaries are developed by the lexicography units, which are part of the Pan-South African Language Board. And as you know, the challenges of the board have very much impacted on functionality of what are called the NLUs, the National Lexicography Units. The AEG pointed out in his comments that we are working with PANSEL and with the lexicography units to ensure that they are resourced. But that dictionary development continues. And obviously the programs are quite closely aligned to terminology development, because as terminology is developed, so dictionaries need to be updated. So there are a number of dictionaries that have been developed, but of course a dictionary is a moving target. It needs to grow and it needs to change. So those lexicography units, and there are 11 representing each of the 11 official languages, so their work is very important in the context of language development, but obviously the PANSEL questions continue to also make this work more complex. And I'm hoping that I've been able to deal with the questions that are at a high level. Thank you.
Okay, the question the Chair asked in terms of what is the status of PANSEL. So it is an entity that is mandated to be created by the Constitution, and so there is the PANSEL Act of 1995 that gives rise to that. So administratively they need to be accountable to the department, but they have that oversight from Parliament perspective. So it is a problem, because also when you look at the TFMA that was promulgated in 1999 before the 1995 Act of PANSEL, which was never then fully updated to reflect all the full TFMA status. So on the TFMA then is on the Schedule 1 as a constitutional entity such as the IEDN and so forth. So administratively they need to be accountable to the department, but in terms of the department can't interfere necessarily on language matters in terms of the substance. So and that is where there needs to be much greater clarity, so that we are able to include it properly into the ambit of being functioned as part of the FMA. That is why the white paper process can help clarify that data. And then perhaps the question by Honourable about on the job creation and why. So when you look inherently at the nature of the sector, is that if I'm a musician, I will not be able to be employed in one production. So I would go into different production. Or if I'm an actor, I'll act in different production. So that on its own, it means that your job is going to be restricted to the lifespan of that particular production. And hence, therefore, the more production you can be able to help support, that creates those opportunities. So those 40,000 opportunities would be measuring the number of productions that created within the different productions that we would help fund. And therefore, by its inherent nature, we could never be able to have permanent employment. And that is why we need to then make sure that we have catalytical kind of funding that can help these productions to be seen and then create those particular opportunities. And the question from Honourable Stock about the uniformity of provincial departments. So we have an index that enables to make sure that core issues are addressed in a uniform manner. And but especially, for example, when we take the conditional grant on libraries, that is done by the provinces. And so there is that framework on how they need to implement the libraries. So of course, then they would then have to implement that framework. But beyond certain issues, it might be difficult to have clear uniformity, but the core issues, we would feel that are covered and they are raised through the MINMEC structure to ensure that uniformity. And then, on the questions of heritage, we can request Ms. Dan Dima to be able to look at the questions that have been raised around the heritage issue.
Thank you very much, DG Hackerson. Maybe just to respond to the question of the national anthem translation into 11 languages. I do understand the concern of the Honorable Kaula that it could just have unintended consequences.
but mainly to say that the idea here was to ensure that people do understand what they are seeing. Because you have got Africans in it, you have got Xhosa in it, you have got Sotho in it. Now, there are people who might not understand all the elements of the national Avande. So the idea here is to ensure that even if you are a Zulu speaker, you should understand what the African part is about. And you should understand what this Sotho aspect of it is about. I remember when I was comfortable and I was very much embarrassed because I thought that it was about Jesus. And yet it says about our nation. So that particular issue is very pertinent because it means I was saying something that I didn't know. Now the idea here is basically that people must understand, and it becomes even more meaningful. They become more emotionally attached when they actually understand the meaning of the anthem. So that's the idea. When the other
point is, I don't think it's going to be any major problem for as long as the formatting of the interpretation does not affect the anthem. You could actually write an interpretation aside and if it is, if you want to change it, then it's no longer an internal anthem.
The idea about Ratul Insan is a difficult one, because what the department is actually doing is to try and invest more in the young ones, the youth, the schools, because the program that you are rolling out in the department is about ensuring that this national anthem, all the national symbols are being understood at a very early age. Of our children, rather than at a later stage. The issue about documenting history, for instance, the hero hacker, in this case, the person, it actually dates back to pre-colonial times. So it's not like it would be looking at current politics, but it looks back at people who resisted colonialism and so forth. I think my colleague has spoken about the bursary, and then there was an issue about track in every school, which was asked by Honorable School about who is implementing this program. And in fact, the department of ASCA, as the council, is implementing this program. Yes, at times we work with the provincial department of sports, arts and culture at the provincial level in the rollout of this particular program. So they do some work, but at a very small scale. At the larger scale is the National Department of 445 and Culture. Let me also pair this with a question that has been raised by the chairperson, that we have only done 14,000. I think if we put together cumulatively, I think we're now at 21,000 and some odd numbers. But then also to respond to the question, how do we make these choices? We're working with the Department of Basic Education because this matter pertains to schools. So we work very closely with the Department of Education in terms of identification of the schools that need those flags. And in fact, the 40,000 number that I'm talking about is the one for 2014-2015, which was kind of a number that we were able to achieve because we had to invest more on the flex, but we worked with the Department of Education. I think the issue of symbols, it's a very intricate one. I think it has been asked by the Select Committee before that the monuments, museums, and memorials that are present in the country are a reflection of the diversity of the country, but also the legislative framework and the policy framework that we have in the country was founded on mission building, national reconciliation. And also, it's very clear that our legislative framework does not condone what is happening in terms of the defacing and all the things that are being done to the issues. So I just thought that let me just highlight that that's the position of the department, that the government, that
it cannot be encouraged that they to pass up within it being defaced and then destroyed. There are processes that need to be followed when maybe there's an education that needs to be done for any transformation that is happening. Thank you.
Colonel goes away or at Tambo, you cover now.
Honorable, uma kubeka nje sibheka ukwakhiwa kwezakhiwo zamasiko ezinjengogabakho Nelson Mandela, Nelson Mandela eqhulu emvezo kuze kuyoba laphana kuyibhuka yingxenye leyo i-Parisian Heritage Route. Ubheke izakhiwo zemuseum njengo-Chief Albert Lutwak yingxenye futhi leyo i-Parisian Heritage Route, o-Freedom Park nabanye ama-sites o-akhiwayo njengamanje la okunongquza nani nani. Iphrogram le eqhubekayo futhi ke ngasho honorable ukuthi le indaba ye-Liberation Heritage Route sangoba isikhathi eside ngoba ikhava isikhathi eside emlandweni wesizwe salapha e-South Africa. So kusho ukuthi lathi sofike silibeke ichaza sidlule bayofika nabanye sifakeke iphansi. Kepha okungani kwenziwa njengamanje ukuthi asenze ukuthi sikugquzele ukuthi mawenzeke umsebenzi wokushesha ngoba siyazi ukuthi umkhulu kakhulu umsebenzi ophathelene ne-Liberation Heritage.
Futhi ebalulekile kakhulu kule ndaba ukuthi i-consultation ne-community yenza njengoba sakhuluma i-coordinator-ke ileyo ukuthi ama-NEC ku-provinces ukuthi bachuze ama-project athathu that would be ama-pilot. And then that involves the community engagement. If I did it, would say the ownership of the community must be there. Above everything, what's the point is that they are the iconic project. And so now, we are now, which is the one and the best. And then, definitely to the question that was raised by Honorable Member Pambos Bukwana on the HR stuff, and then maybe to address the chair's issue about it, it doesn't make sense to have vacancies that are not filled and then take away that budget. It is the battle that we are engaging in treasury about to make sure that there is an adjustment somehow that can be made, because then if you cut down the budget and we also cutting it down on consultants, then the capacity will not be there to actually drive service delivery. So as part of our consultancy reduction plan, we're also going to be addressing the issue of vacancies. But maybe the specific questions of people with disabilities, very important to know that that is the target, but we can't make it full more commitment so it can be able to expand on that.
In terms of the request of having a detailed report on invisible or visible disability, I think that's something that, you know, I should be able to report in writing, like you said, that no support is
We do not have a full-time resource, ANDIO, so the likelihood is that there will be some remnants that may have cropped up. However, since I pulled up 14 in what is there was the first version, then what I'm calling it, so TKP, the Utakilana, who called us like Angara, that is correct, that before the Supreme another right, that will be then disseminated to the public. But as they are born, I hope to warn you, then we're going to make sure it is definitely not a part of our assurance.
Follow up.
ingathi kum lokufanele intoba ukhona futhi because i-conference imento esayibumile njengale lapha ngu-emergency endicingake ngokuba lulutho department uba iqinisekise into yokokuba ukhona lezemane ejongene nazo i-document uba kaloku saphuma niyibone mva seyiphumile loo nto ngoku inike
And the presentation by the department was quite detailed and comprehensive. We do appreciate that. But maybe next time when you prepare the secret of your presentation, such that was good to see. It was their ability of being very comprehensive when he gives the briefing. You allocate yourself in such a way that you don't consume a lot of time and then the others do not get space to come in and engage. So I would request that. Secondly, give a provincial perspective as well. Mm-hmm. That is very highly appreciated. Thirdly, I would advise that you look at the issues that are raised by the Solicitor General and correct those because they will ask you what you did out of the report because they're trying to improve. We're going to ask you that. I'm not going to get into the issue of the election manifesto because I know what is prescribed in relation to the community centers. And what you presented is not consistent with the manifesto in that regard, in terms of the numbers. And I know it is because of budget constraints. But we've got to give other communities out there. So look at the issue as well as the and see how we are going to be able to manage it. I think I would say thank you very much. At this point, we hope to help you to engage you better regarding your report. And we are aware of the financial constraints, but this depends we possibly do with the little that we have. And we exercise correct control and over the institute. I know the inherent nature of the department doesn't have to work with anything, but you still have a duty to assure that they deliver what you expect that you deliver. So, do your way in such a way that you benefit by the extent of the energy. Thank you very much. And attend to the issues of pencil. They are squarely on your shoulders. You just have to do something about it. We can't remain in a situation like this endlessly. There has to be a time where the minister can fight what he wants to do with the NGT and establish. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let us continue with the minutes, but maybe before this minute, let me just remind the members about the meeting tomorrow at 8 with the Department of Fire Education. 8 o'clock. And please let us take time by 8 so that we make maximum use of 2 hours. Thank you.
the minutes of the previous meeting were circulated. To the members, it was the meeting held on the 6th of May between ourselves and the Department of State. Were operating in the years under the Department of State.
So immediately you say instead of the pump, the power. So you've lost it and I take offense. And the reason I'm saying I'm not using a mic, I just want to make sure because committee members in our select committee have made it very, very clear that they know my name, everybody pronounces them my name the way it is. Secondly, it's always we've spent almost a year and I'm disappointed that they can't spell my name by mouth. After a year, almost a year. Everybody gets pronounced my name. So we don't tell you that. But I am saying, I've been known for a very long time. When I get to a house with my dad, yeah, yeah, I'm going to take that. That's why I'm saying, you're not using the mic. If I'm in here, shy.
All right, we are also going to keep our apologies ready. I mean, it does offend. I think if their names or telling them is correctly accepted, I hope that they hear it and it's not going to be repeated. Thank you from now.
Thank you.
Is there any other issue that you wish to raise with regard to the minutes of page 1?
No.
Page 2?
Agree.
Agree. Honorable sir.
No, I think it is not to specific matter. I'm just looking at the name. And then, mm-hmm. What is it that you are capturing when you are just general questions, when we write minutes? If you look at the minutes as the chat, it doesn't capture the question. I don't know whether we do write the question or not, except what it is, what was expected from the document, the specific objective, and strategic goals. Those are straight from the document. Meaning that our discussion is the three bullets. Mm-hmm. If this, I'm just asking what is that we're capturing when we write minutes, because maybe when I know, I can make a comment, because you know what we're going.
Okay, let me allow the Secretary of the Commission to respond to this one.
This format of the meeting was adopted by the Chairperson and it's something that was given to us. The understanding is, I think, meaning that we cannot capture everything that is listed. Part of the explanation when we're given this format was that the purpose of meeting is to discuss and get resolutions that members are taking. And what was emphasized was that if there's anything that the committee agreed on, that's what must be captured in our meeting. For example, when the department indicates that the committee wants a report, for example, as indicated, that is what must be captured in our meeting. Because when they finished, we used to write everything that was said, and we told that those were not meaning property. Because you are writing everything that was discussed in a meeting without seeing what actually was the agreement of the meeting. So this is what we got from the House Chairperson's office, that we need to briefly explain the issues that were discussed. For example, the first indicated that the priorities of the department for the next 5 years are full, and that the minutes must indicate that the presentation, everything that was said by the department. So these minutes must be attached to the PowerPoint presentation that was made. When you read the minutes, you need to have that PowerPoint.
which members have. This is a standard format that is used by all committees of panel.
Maybe if one were to clarify the issue further, we are one committee in any case. What they mean is acting for purposes of social services. Are they written in a similar format or is it different?
No, it's almost similar, even though maybe there is a picture, but I'm just saying, looking at this chapter, this means you can write them even before, without a meeting, managing a fair amount of admin. And that is why I was saying the general sentence, because it covers both committees. Are you going to ensure who the committee is? Because the issues that you are raising, even though you may not write everything in a meeting, I know that. But it is key issues that you are raising as members must appear so they are able to follow up. Because as it stands now, there is nothing to follow up. Nothing that relates to us except what came from the president from the cabinet. And if he is correct, and then they said must write the resolution. True, they must write. But those resolutions, the minutes must give a flow, which these resolutions are informed by this discussion. So I'm just raising it without saying we must change the format, but as it stands now, are you keeping the issue with the
scholar? Okay. Or whatever. Whatever. Okay. Thank you, Chief. I'm suggesting, because Udang is saying that this is the format you call with the other committees. Well, I'm suggesting both our chairs and sit down with our secretaries, indicate to them how you wanted the minutes to be written so that we understand one another. I think it will be very good in that regard.
Okay, I love the question if I should say something different, because the way I heard him respond is that they were given a format by somebody else. Now the issue should start there. Maybe as chaplains we need to put as we get to express our concern and to say that the format is not very when you repair a little bit. I think maybe if you correct it, it would help. Because they were given an instruction to correct the specific problem. So they can correct from there, from where the instruction was given. If you want to say something before come
with us.
This format was agreed politically and it was given to us. So it should be important for Shepherds also to raise Shepherds. Because that's mentioned the last one. When they changed from the old way of doing it, there was also a problem. For example, in other parties, I won't mention the name, but there are parties where when members are first, they want to check how many questions that member asked in the committee meeting. So you find that when the committee is sitting, that member would want to ask 40 questions. Mm-hmm. So that member is preparing for when the time for assessment and when they want minutes. So you find that when they adopt minutes, because there is no room, a member would insist that I've asked 20 questions, I don't see them for the minutes. Yes. And then you end up the committee with 12 or 13 pages, only questions that were asked by members of the committee. So they then developed the format to say, and before the members would even insist that when you write that the question was asked by me, therefore put my name as one of the and then show that you can't put names, you can't put names of members in minutes, because it can also be problematic. Sometimes you put names to say one of the members also ask the question. Only to find that maybe as you are a couple, you did not fully understand context. And then you put the name, and then the members more said, but that's not what I said. So we told that we put the name, and they then changed and said we must use this format to
somebody, all the other things. But certain things can get better clarity from the health chair.
I think we'll resolve the issue. We need to consult with the health chair and see how best we can resolve the issue. But we take account of the issues that are raising. That work for the chair. Honourable member, I want to say the good my chair. Thank you.
Good morning.